Student Loan Show, episode 52. Last week on the Student Loan Show, I gave you the truth about how student loans affect your credit score. We talked about how credit scores work, the impact of going into default, and how you can move the needle and get a higher credit score. And this week, we're covering how you can get a mortgage, even if you've got a ton of student loan debt. Think it's impossible? Not so. Just stick around, and I'll give you the roadmap to making it happen. Hello again, it's Jay Fleischman coming to you from the Financial Rights Nerve Center for another episode of the Student Loan Show. Today we're talking about the glory of homeownership and how to get there if you've got student loans. Before we start out today, I want to tell you about a free resource I've put together for you that will teach you the most important things you need to know to succeed with your student loans. You can get it by pulling out your cell phone and texting the word student loans to the number 44222 or by going to studentloanshow.com/course and entering your name and email address. When you do, you'll get my upcoming free 6-part email course teaching you the most important things you need to know in order to succeed with your student loans. You get one lesson each day by email for 6 days. Each one breaks down one aspect of student loan payments so you can get a really good understanding of exactly what you need to know. I'll teach you about all of the student loan repayment options, dealing with debt collectors, getting out of default, and what to look out for when settling your student loans. Like I said, it's 100% free, and I really think you'll get a lot out of it. All you need to do is text the word student loans to the number 44222 or go to studentloanshow.com/course, and I'll make sure you get on the list. So according to some reports, millennials aren't buying homes anymore because of their student loans. In fact, the third quarter of 2015 showed a home ownership rate near its lowest point in 3 decades. In fact, the home ownership rate was 63.7% in spite of a rising economy and a strengthening housing market. But a study done by TransUnion studied borrowers with student loans who entered repayment from 3 different time frames, the fourth quarter of 2005, the fourth quarter of 2009, and the fourth quarter of 2012. And it found that in only 3 to 6 years, student loan consumers in their 20s are able to pass similarly aged consumers without a student loan in overall loan participation rates on mortgages, auto loans, and credit cards. So if student loans are crushing everybody, how is this possible? Because if you've got student loans, then you've got a college education. And with a college education, you earn more money than those who don't have a college education, or at least so they say. I know plenty of people without student loans who are making a lot more money than some of my college friends, in spite of the fact that many of my friends are in what would usually be considered white-collar jobs. So the question is, how are people with student loans able to get mortgages, especially in such a short period of time after they come into repayment? There are 5 things that you need to do in order to join the ranks of those who are able to get mortgages. Now, I'm not saying that you're going to get a mortgage, because I'm not saying that you want to get a mortgage, but wouldn't it be nice to know that you could qualify for a down payment if you wanted to? Maybe you don't want a mortgage now, but in 4 years you decide, hey, I want to buy a house or a condo or a vacation property or whatever it is. You want to be able to be in a position to get that mortgage, even if you don't have any immediate plans to do so. So we've got 5 things to do. 1, minimize your payment amounts. 2, make those payments on time. 3, maximize your savings for that down payment. 4, look for ways to bring down the balance of your student loans more quickly. And 5, maximize your income. Sounds pretty easy, right? Okay, let's dive into it. First, you want to minimize your payment amounts. it used to be the case that if you deferred your student loans, they wouldn't count when it came time to apply for a mortgage. That's not the case anymore. Under new FHA guidelines that went into effect in September 2015, applicants who had been granted a temporary deferment from making student loan payments for at least 12 months are no longer allowed to have that debt ignored in their debt-to-income ratio. Now, debt-to-income ratios are used to judge if a borrower has the ability to repay a mortgage. Too high of a debt-to-income ratio, that's typically about 43%, though some lenders will go as high as 50%, but too high of a debt-to-income ratio, and the applicant is going to be likely denied for that mortgage because they're seen as carrying too much debt. So if they're carrying too much debt relative to their income, they're more likely to default on that mortgage. In the old days, if you were in deferment, you had a debt-to-income ratio with respect to your student loans of zero. Now, if you're in deferment, the FHA rules require that 2% of the outstanding student loan balance has to be counted towards your monthly debt-to-income ratio if the loan is in deferment. So if you've got a $100,000 loan, 2% of that, which is $2,000, is considered your monthly payment if you're in deferment. And you don't want that to happen because FHA loans typically have lower down payments and lower interest rates than conventional loans. So if you get denied for an FHA loan, it's probably going to mean higher mortgage payments overall, and you don't want that to happen. But here's the trick. If you go into one of the income-dependent repayment plans for your federal student loans, the FHA looks at the actual loan payment, not 2%. That 2% number is only if the loan is in deferment. So what you want to do is you want to go into an income-dependent repayment plan because that's going to minimize your student loan payments without putting you into deferment. So first step, minimize those payment amounts by going into an income-dependent repayment option. Number two, make your payments on a timely basis. As I said way back last time on episode 51, a credit score is a number that reflects your historical repayment patterns and infers your present ability to make payments. It's calculated based on five categories. That's the amount owed, your payment history, percentage of new credit, length of overall credit history, in other words, how long you've had a credit score, and last but not least, credit mix, what kinds of loans and debts you have outstanding. So if you make your payments on time, you show your payment history is a good one, as well as you're bringing down your overall balance. And the longer that you do this, the longer your payment history will be. That's all good. You've got the ability to pay. You've got the positive payment history. You're building a length of credit. You're lowering your debt-to-income ratio. Knocks it out of the park. Make your payments on a timely basis. If you don't make your payments on a timely basis, not just on your student loans, but on anything, your ability to get a down payment is thrown out pretty quickly, actually. So now you've minimized your payment amounts and you're making your payments on a regular basis. Your next step, you want to build up your savings for that down payment. Remember, we're not going into that cycle of forbearance and deferment because that's going to harm our chances for an FHA loan. But we are going to work with an income-dependent repayment plan so that we can keep those payments under control. It's also going to free up more money to make the payments on the private student loans that you may have because there's no income-dependent repayment option for those. And it also means that we're going to have a little less money to stock away for that down payment. So we've got to take care to maximize every opportunity. So the first thing that you need to do in order to start building a down payment is you have to figure out how much of a down payment you need. And you can't do that unless you figure out how much house you can afford. So you need to sit down and you need to figure out how much of a house you can afford. There's a home calculator at Bankrate, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And there are a number of home calculators out there. If you don't like the one from Bankrate, go ahead online, go to Google, type in home calculator, and you'll find a whole mess of them. Find whichever one you like. Use a number of them just in case there are any variations in the way that they do their calculations. But that's going to figure out how much of a house you can afford. And once you know how much you can afford, then it's time to start savings. Your savings are important. And without a down payment, you're never going to get there. So you've got to start saving. And you really want to put the pedal to the metal here. You want to save as much as you can, because not only are you going to have to cover that down payment, you're also going to have closing costs, and you're also going to undoubtedly have work that you need to do in the house or in the condo when you first buy it. Even if it's just a coat of paint, you're going to have things that you're going to have to spend money on. You're going to have movers. Maybe you want the floors redone, or you want new carpeting, you want paint, maybe you want to change some light fixtures. That's not even talking about the costs of maintaining a house. You have no idea. If you've never owned a house, you have no idea what kind of costs there are of maintenance. Yeah, you've got property taxes and water, and if there's a lawn, you're going to have to get somebody to tend to that, or you're going to have to buy yourself a lawnmower. Either way, it's going to come out to some money. Maybe you live in a place where you pay separately for trash pickup. As far as the down payment, you want to shoot for more than 20% of the purchase price. If you've got 20%, you're going to have a way easier time getting approved for a mortgage. You're also going to be able to avoid PMI, which is private mortgage insurance. That's an additional insurance policy that your mortgage company takes out in order to compensate them for what the mortgage companies perceive as a higher potential for default. And that kicks in, PMI kicks in, when the mortgage balance is more than 20% of the value of the house. So if you put less than 20% down, you're going to get hit with that extra PMI charge. And that can run up to a couple of $100 a month, depending upon the value of the house and the amount of the mortgage. So if you can, you want to hit over 20% by all means. And if you live in a place where 20% is going to be more than you can reasonably save in the next 5 years because property values are really high, don't sweat it too much. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will buy mortgages with as little as 3% down, which means that conforming loans are easier to get because down payment requirements have been reduced. I don't know if it's always going to be that way, but for now it is. Yeah, you're going to get hit with PMI, but in a place where property values are really high, major metropolitan areas in particular, it really may be the only way that you're going to be able to get into home ownership. And if that's really what you want, then sometimes you have to do what you have to do. So if you can't get to the 20%, there are some fallbacks. But again, what we're talking about today is the situation where you're looking to save the money and you want to put yourself in the best position to get a mortgage, even if you're not in the market for one now, and even if you don't think you're ever going to be in the market for one. If you change your mind at some point in the future, it's always better to have the option than to not have the options, especially if you're not actively looking to get into a mortgage and a home buying situation. Maybe easier to get to the 20% because you don't have to have the money within a certain amount of time. You're just looking to save as much as you can. So again, shoot for the 20%. If you can, it's going to save you money on PMI. It's also going to put you in a better position to qualify for a mortgage just in general. So how do we get that down payment? We've got the number. We know how much of a house we can afford. So we know how much 20% is, and we're going to even try to go above 20%, but we kind of know where we are. So now that we know where we are, now you can start saving. And to do that, you need two things. You need a budget and you need a savings plan. So first, the budget. The easiest way to start a budget is to use a spreadsheet. open up Excel, take your monthly gross income, and then subtract taxes and anything else that gets backed out of your pay stub. That's going to tell you your net income after taxes. That's going to tell you how much money you have every month to spend on stuff. From there, you're going to back out your monthly costs like your rent, your student loans, your car payments, your credit card bills, food, clothing, gas, electric, cell phone, you name it, it comes off the top. Now, if you have money left over and you've got a decent sum of money, that's great. But if there's not much left over, then you're going to have to make some changes to your lifestyle. You're either going to have to bring in more money or you're going to have to spend less money. It's the only way that there's going to be anything left. Spending less, you got to be ruthless, totally ruthless, because this is your future and only you are in control of this. So, you know, shop with coupons, cut your cable, pay off your car and don't finance another one. Run this one into the ground. Shop around for car insurance. We talked about all of this before in episode 40. I'll put a link in the show notes, but go back and listen to it. We talked all about budgeting. Budgeting is the cornerstone. So go back and listen to episode 40. And once you've put things together so you've got money left over, you can put together a savings plan. What most people do is they say, well, I've got $500 a month left over, so I'm going to rely upon myself to put away that $500. Don't do that because it's never going to happen. I have spoken to thousands of people who say that they're going to put away X dollars a month every month, and it never happens because life is unpredictable. And if you've got the money in your account, you're far more likely to spend it. Your best option is to have your savings done automatically. If you are an employee and you've got direct deposit, you can have your payroll company deduct a fixed amount of money from each paycheck or percentage and have it direct deposited to a separate savings account. Or you can also use an app that I use. It's called Digit. Digit is awesome. What Digit does is you give it access to your checking account and it does nothing for a little while. It just kind of watches your spending patterns. It watches your income patterns. And over time, it figures out how you're spending your money, and it makes very small withdrawals, and it dumps it into a separate savings account, and it's an FDIC-insured bank. It's a regular bank. It's not one of these fly-by-night places. It will never overdraw your checking account. In fact, Digit's got a guarantee that if they do overdraw your checking account, they'll pay all the fees. I've never had a problem with Digit. It's never overdrawn my checking account. And it is just fantastic. So if you couple Digit with that direct deposit, you are in a great position. If you've got an IRA, an individual retirement account, there's also an IRS tax benefit for first-time home buying. If you're going to buy a home and it's your first time buying a home, or even if it's that you're building a home, you can take up to $10,000 as a withdrawal and not have to pay the standard early distribution penalty. Now, you're still going to have to pay income taxes on the withdrawal, but no early distribution penalty. If it's a Roth, you've already been taxed on the income because the Roth puts money in after taxes. So if you've got a Roth, the account has to be at least 5 years old before you can tap it for the qualified distribution. But if you need money for that down payment, you can take up to 10 grand out, but slow and steady wins the race. Even if it's $50 a week, it's going to add up way faster than you think. Between the automatic savings from splitting your direct deposit to Digit to working on that budget and bringing down your expenses to increasing your income over time, that's all good stuff. Slow and steady wins the race, and that's going to help you out. So get started on that sooner rather than later. Next up, you want to look for ways to bring down the balance on your student loans. The real culprit here is the private student loans. Those are the loans that don't come with an income-dependent repayment option. They usually have variable interest rates, and often there are guarantors that are involved. And so you want to do everything that you can to bring those loans down as fast as you can. If you can refinance with a company like SoFi or Common Bond, do that. Get a fixed rate. Hopefully you won't need a guarantor. Pay it off faster. If you can't refinance, you got to put the pedal to the metal. You got to get rid of those private student loans as fast as you can. Start selling stuff if need be. Everything that you can't absolutely positively live without, it's going to hurt, but you're going to get rid of those private student loans a lot faster. Avoid credit cards like a bed of nails. Do absolutely everything that you can to stay away from credit cards. You don't need that brand new iPhone. Go for an older iPhone that you buy on eBay. Make sure that you shut off your pay-per-view. All of that is going to go a long way towards helping you bring down the balance on the private student loans. And you've got to do it because you got to get rid of those things. They are toxic. And last but not least, the final thing that you need to do in order to qualify for this mortgage, you got to work on your income. You got to use everything in your power to increase your income. If you've been in a job for a few years, start looking for another one. Maybe you can get a raise. Maybe there's something else out there that's going to get you better money. Don't stay in a job just because it's safe. Start looking for a new job. You never know if there's one out there. Consider a second job. Yeah, you'd rather go out with friends at night. Use the time to get a second job. Work a night or two. It's not going to kill you. And the additional money is going to be really good to getting you in a better financial position. There are more options than ever. There's TaskRabbit. There's Instacart. There's Uber and Lyft. There are gigs on Craigslist. There are places to make extra money. Work nights, work weekends, do whatever you got to do. There are a lot of options out there. You don't want to pass by any opportunity to bring down those student loan payments and to continue to add to the savings towards an eventual down payment. Anything that you can do to get a spare dollar, so long as it's legal, safe, and ethical, do that. And if you do these things, before you know it, you're going to be in a position to be able to get a mortgage, assuming that that's what you want. And if it's not what you want, at the very least, you're going to be in a position to have a savings and you're going to have your finances in order. If you don't want to get a mortgage, fine, don't get a mortgage, but it's a good thing to know that you can, right? My name is Jay Fleischman. You've been listening to The Student Loan Show. This has been episode 52, talking about how to get a mortgage if you've got student loans. Remember to text the word student loans to the number 44222 or go to studentloanshow.com/course and sign up for my upcoming free 6-part email course teaching you the most important things you need to know about in order to succeed with your student loans. You're going to walk away with a great understanding of exactly what you need to know. Also, check out the show notes at studentloanshow.com/SLS52. It'll give you links to resources, show notes, and a whole lot more. Join the Facebook group, drop me a note with your questions, listen to past shows. That's where it's all at, folks. On the next show, I'm going to be answering your questions about student loans. So be here next week and listen in. If you've got a question, head on over to the site, submit it, and I am happy to add it to the growing pile of questions that I'm going to be answering. Until then, again, my name is Jay Fleischman. Thanks so much for being here. And remember, always look both ways before crossing the street.